Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for joining us today for our consideration of the proposed updates for taxonomy 2018, the general improvements. We've circulated all the materials before the meeting, and we look forward to your comments as we go. You can see the people in the room here, and we're joined on the phone by the members of the ITCG. And I would just ask if you keep your microphones muted when you're not speaking, because there's a lot of noise at our end if you don't do this. So we have three things on our agenda. First up, the analysis of the comments received on the proposed taxonomy update, general improvements. And that will be handled by Aisha. I'm handing over to Aisha for this. Thank you.
Thank you, Isabel.
Yes, so
Aisha and Iza, thank you.
I just wanted to say a few words before we start the analysis of feedback. So today we are going to finalize our discussions on the proposed taxonomy update, and we will discuss the feedback that we have received. And both taxonomy updates that we will discuss today will be part of the annual taxonomy 2019. We will start with the general improvements, and then we have just one issue that we will discuss on the IFRS 13 common practice review. We've missed one of the comments, and we wanted to highlight this comment today. So if we look on the slide 2 for the general improvements, we would like to remind you that we have published the proposed taxonomy update at the beginning of December, and at the beginning of the February, the comment letter deadline was finished. We have received two comment letters that you will be able to see on our website. One was from Global Financial Reporting Collective, and the other one was from Topham Merrill. We have prepared, similarly to the slides that we prepared for you last time for IFRS 13, we have prepared here one slide that is summarizing the feedback on all of the issues that were included in the proposed taxonomy update. However, just to make sure that we use our time efficiently, we've highlighted those areas where the commentators or respondents agree with us, and we are not planning to go through those issues specifically, or those proposals specifically. But what we've done on the slides, we have provided you with the proposed taxonomy update paragraph. So if you would like to familiarize yourself or go back to and remind yourself about what was proposed for those proposals in details, you are able to do so. So today we would like to focus on those areas where people commented on and tell us that there are some additional notes, or whether there was a disagreement with some of those proposals. And Aisha will take us through it.
Okay. Thanks, Lisa. So starting with the first one, which is the proposals that related to adding implementation notes. So this proposal came about because we received feedback from stakeholders that many errors in XBRL filings are related to the incorrect use of either positive or negative signs. So as a background, currently in the IFRS taxonomy, we have a certain modeling features that mirror what other XBRL taxonomies do. And that is that as much as possible, for monetary line items, we assign a balance attribute of either debit or credit, which generally results in most elements having a positive sign in the XBRL filing. Additionally, the standard element labels for line items can be used to understand whether a positive or a negative sign should be reported. And this is particularly important for elements that we call two-way elements, i.e. elements like profit or loss, where there is a term or a couple of terms in brackets. It is the case that we found that 155 elements in the IFRS taxonomy that are monetary do not have balance attributes. So we proposed adding implementation notes to explain, to provide further explanation to preparers on when to enter a positive or a negative value. And the specific notes that we proposed are shown on slide 6. So we proposed two different implementation notes, one for elements that are normally expected to have a positive value and not another implementation note for those that can either have a positive or a negative value. So the feedback that we received, Site 7 provides an overview of the feedback that we received in this area. So both TOP and Merrill and JFRC, you know, supported using implementation notes in the IFRS taxonomy, and JFRC specifically said that it would lead to more consistent and accurate tagging and therefore fewer extensions in that regard. However, we received two sets of comments from JFRC on this proposal. The first relates to the general approach to addressing the incorrect use of sign, which is through implementation notes. They suggested a different alternative to address that issue. And secondly, they had some suggested amendments to the wording that we used in the proposed implementation notes. So I'll summarize the feedback that we got from both sets of comments and our suggested response, and then I'll pause for feedback from you. So in regards to the general approach, essentially GFRC said that they would prefer dealing with the incorrect use of sign differently. And that is essentially recommendation for an alternative modeling approach for IFRS taxonomy elements, which is to assign balance attributes in a way that all IFRS taxonomy elements will result in positive signs in the XBRL filing. This means that for exception cases, such as the two-way elements like profit or loss that I mentioned earlier, they suggested splitting those elements into two separate elements and assigning positive values to each one, which means that, you know, an implementation note would not be necessary to explain the sign to be used. Now, after analyzing the feedback that we received on that, we think that this relates to the modeling for the elements, and we think that is outside the scope of this particular update. So in light of that, we recommend retaining the proposals in that regard. However, we made a few observations that we would like to just point out to solidify our proposal. And the first is that most IFRS taxonomy elements, about 70% of them, will generally result in a positive sign in the XBRL filing. And additionally, our IFRS taxonomy formula checks that the sign reported for those elements are the correct ones. And secondly, we think the suggestion to have separate elements for the exception cases could actually be burdensome for both preparers and users, because in the case of the exceptions, they would need two elements to track to track profitability over time in the case of profit or loss. And secondly, when members are used with a line item, the reported sign could change, which could add to additional burden in terms of analysis and comparability over time. And finally, our approach of relying on the balance attribute and the standard element label is consistent with the approach followed in other major taxonomies as well. The second set of feedback that we received related to the wording that we used in the specific note, and the feedback we received from JFRC specifically related to the first implementation note on slide 6, and this is the implementation note for elements that are normally expected to have a positive value. In their view, they thought that the proposed note as written is not helpful because it refers to supporting materials outside of the IFRS taxonomy to get the full list of consideration that could change the sign from the normally expected positive to potentially a negative sign. So to address that feedback, we considered two options. The first being to essentially do nothing with some minor amendments, retaining the proposed implementation note. And the second option we considered was to change the proposed implementation note to include all the members that could cause a sign reversal. Before I go into our analysis on the two options, I just want to explain the minor amendment that we would propose under option one. And that is to essentially just kind of clarify our intended message with that implementation note. So what we intended was that we would normally expect a positive, but if the line item is used with the certain members, it could still be positive, but then there is a case for it possibly being negative. And we thought the use of unless in that proposed implementation could be ambiguous, so we just proposed some editorial changes to kind of be a bit more clear in that regard, and this relates to option one if we were to retain the proposed implementation note. So slide 11 kind of puts a visual to the two options. So as you can see, option one looks short and simple, and option two has a bit more lines to it. So this slide shows the pros or analysis of the pros and cons for the two options. Under option one, which is retaining the proposal, the biggest disadvantage that we see on this, which is what GFRC's feedback was, that preparers would need to refer to multiple sources outside of the taxonomy to identify the full set of consideration that could result in a sign reversal. However, because we expect sign reversal to be rare, you know, it's likely that that additional work is not going to be too burdensome for preparers. And then, as I mentioned earlier, the note under this option appears a bit more reader-friendly depending on the software used. Under option two, the biggest advantage for this option is essentially the full set of consideration to understand the note would be available to preparers within the IFRS taxonomy. A negative over and above option one is that it could require additional maintenance for the annual IFRS taxonomy in the case of if any of the 21 members that are included in the notes, if they're updated or changed for whatever reason, then we would need to update the implementation note accordingly. On balance, however, we recommend option two, and that's because looking at the objective of introducing implementation note in the first place is to help preparers determine the correct sign to use and avoid tagging errors, and we think option two provides a more fulsome approach to ensure that benefit materializes. And we note that the additional maintenance that would be required to facilitate this would not be significant, and it's akin to what we currently have to do today for documentation labels. So I'll pause there and see if you have any comments or feedback on our responses to both the comments we received on the general approach and the specific notes.
Thanks, Aisha. So any comments from people on the phone?
And I would like to highlight here that we are actually proposing change to the proposed taxonomy update. And the note will look differently.
Okay, we'll take that as no comments, and people agree with the staff's proposed approach. That's option two on slide 12. And the other slide is the other bit we have to agree on.
That is slide nine.
And slide nine, agreeing with the staff's position on slide nine. Okay, thank you. No comments. Aisha, if you'd like to proceed to the next part. Oh, sorry.
It's John.
Hi, John.
I'm on the call.
Okay, John, yeah. I'll hand over to you now, John.
Okay, good. Okay. I guess we were just going to go ahead and proceed.
All right. All right, so the next section relates to the proposal on assigning ballast attributes. And this relates to 12 elements, again, without assigned balance attributes, currently in the taxonomy that don't have assigned balance attributes. So for those elements, we recognize that we could assign a balance attribute. So we proposed assigning balance attributes to all of the elements that are on the table on slide 14, and then changing the element labels for some of them to further clarify the sign that should be reported in the XBRL filing. So GFRC disagreed with the proposals to assign balance attributes to some of the elements in the previous slide, and that is because they think they said those elements are not recognized in the primary financial statement. In their view, they think balance attributes should only be for recognized amounts and not for inputs, unrecognized items, and things like supplementary information. However, they did say that they would see a stronger case for assigning balance attributes to the last three elements representing contingent assets and liabilities than the first set representing IFRS 13 requirements. All right, so in response to that, we recommend retaining our proposals because we think our arguments are still valid. We mentioned in the PTU that we are assigning this balance attributes to help preparers determine the correct sign for the XBRL filing, for the expiring value. So as a result, we don't think that the balance attributes need to exactly match the assignment of debit or credit in your typical paper financial statement. In addition, as I've mentioned earlier, the way we assign balance attribute is consistent with the approach followed in other major tech for other monetary line items in the IFRS taxonomy today. And also in the PTU, we mentioned that for the first three elements relating to unobservable inputs, we proposed changing those elements from line items to members in the IFRS 13 proposed update, which those proposals are now in the process of being finalized, having discussed that with you at the last ITCG meeting. And as a result, because they're now members, we will not be assigning balance attributes to those elements because they're not applicable to members. An additional feedback that we got from GFRC, not directly relating to the proposal, but actually also combines the feedback that I mentioned earlier of a general approach of assigning only positive values to IFRS taxonomy elements and not associating debit or credit with supplementary information like reconciliation. So they provided an example which we had in the PTU to explain why we can't assign balance attributes, and this relates to the depreciation expense element. So they've just reiterated that this is an example where we could have two separate elements, one for recognizing the profit or loss, and then another for reconciliation. And our response here is similar to what I mentioned earlier, that we think this is outside the scope of this update and would need to go through separate consultation. So we don't recommend any amendments to the proposals in this specific regard. So I'll pause here to see if you have any comments on our response on the GFRC comments on the proposals and the additional feedback that's on this slide.
I think you spoke first. Once you're in. Mike, go ahead, Mike.
No, go ahead, Lou. Go ahead, Lou.
Being so nice.
Lou.
Well, my comment is regarding depreciation and that it doesn't have a balance attribute. And they're saying that it could be, you know, should have two. I agree with the first part about those six elements, but slide 17, I've always thought that something like depreciation should have to a debit element and a credit element. Over the years, I thought we've decided to put the gavel down that that's the way we're going and not to look back. But since we're looking back, every accounting entry has a debit side and a credit side, and usually just one of those sides is just, so we just have one element. When it's common that both sides are disclosed, like depreciation expense, where the expense is disclosed, the debit side, the credit side is often disclosed in the roll forward. I think in those situations, my view is, yes, we should have two elements, but one for the debit side and one for the credit side. You could argue, well, then we should do that for every element should have both sides, but my answer to that is no, only for those that are commonly disclosed, both the debit side and credit side. So, like I said, I think we already put the gavel down, but my view is, for those items, we should have two elements. That's all.
I think in principle, the staff will not disagree with your approach, Lou. It's a different approach. I think one of the things, it's definitely outside of the scope of implementation notes, but it doesn't stop us revisiting this modeling approach at a different time, really. And I think we would need to consider, okay, what would be the benefits of changing it now versus the disadvantage of retagging? And there's definitely a debate to be had, but that debate, I think, needs to be put at another other meeting needs to be put in an other proposal, because we definitely would, it would not be any effective decision. There are many more elements in the IFRS taxonomy that have a similar kind of issue, and I think that would have to go through public consultation as well to get feedback of stakeholders on it. That's why we said, when we say it's outside the scope of this project, means it's outside of the scope of the implementation notes, but there is a bigger debate to be had. So we definitely would agree with you on that view.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I agree that it's outside of scope. So yeah, let's talk about it further if need be later. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Mike. You have a comment as well.
I agree with the implementation approach that's being discussed here in the deck. I was wondering if there's any additional outreach or training courses or webinars in which guidance will be provided to the registrants, the filers, to give examples of these kinds of ideas.
You mean specific to implementation labels, Mike, or generally about the kind of changes that will be included within the annual taxonomy?
I was thinking more generally about the idea of negative values and when you have double-sided entries, those kinds of things.
Okay.
Because these are obviously can be confusing to filers, and I was just curious about how that's going to be communicated.
Okay, one thing we have done, and in the preparer's guide, which we updated a new version, released that in January, there's a whole section about how to enter positive or negative values in an XBRL filing. And included within that is also this thing about an example of how things can reverse assign, yeah? And there's also, I think we also touch on that issue of depreciation expense, really. So typical we say, look to preparers, if you know how to use, what you know how to use IFRS taxonomy, really read the preparer's guide, because that is our Bible of everything we know could be potential issues. And there's a whole section there. And besides what we have said there, we did not plan any additional specific outreach on positive or negative XBRL values.
Okay, got it. Maybe that's up for the ITCG members then to consider in their own educational outreach to provide some, I'll call them public examples of things that they're seeing under the banner of like what not to wear. Because we are certainly seeing some really incredibly bad implementations of these ideas.
Mm-hmm. It's Rachel here. Do you think that we need something beyond what's included in the preparer's guide? And if so, what sort of things do you think would be particularly useful? Because we do know that people struggle with these positive and negative signs.
I think, like, in my personal opinion, is real life examples and then what the implications are to the user or to the filer. I just don't think filers are cognizant of what happens when they make these kinds of errors, or even how to identify these kinds of errors that are very common.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this is something we can think about, take offline for this, because I think it's not directly relevant to this document, but let's have a think about whether we want to do something in this area.
I agree. Also, I want to flag out, of course, that our IFRS taxonomy formula already checks for the correct use of positive or negative XBRL values. Therefore, to be honest, we encourage people in the market to use the formula when tagging financial statements, especially for positive and negative values. Even then, you can't always exclude. If you still enter a profit or loss, enter a negative value for a loss, for a profit, you know what, please don't do that.
And even those implementation notes that we've done here, they are kind of based on what we already have in the formula, so we kind of transferred the knowledge that we have for formulas into the IFRS taxonomy, but IFRS formulas do include more elements, not only those without the accounts balance attributes, but there is a lot of other elements, both for positive and for negative, that should be included, that are in the formulas, and there are other checks too. So I would agree with Rita that I would encourage people to start using them, because hopefully that can improve the quality of data.
Okay,
Okay.
It's also a
thing. I have a question.
Sorry, go ahead.
I have a question about the syntax that's being used for the implementation notes. It sounds like these are being used as labels as opposed to using the reference.
Yes.
Syntax, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Have you considered using the reference construct like we do in the US GAAP taxonomy?
Yes, we did. We brought this, I believe, a few sessions ago to the ITCG, the pros and cons to use the references versus labels. And we, at this point of time, we decided to go for labels and just postpone use of references because of the translations issues and other things that we identify in the use of references. But at this time, we propose using labels.
Mm-hmm. Louis, that was discussed also at, I think it was a September ITCG call, and there we strongly believe that references could provide more structure, which could put it easier for software to consume this data, whoever for us, because the IFRS taxonomy is used globally to make sure that this information can be translated, was a more important consideration.
Okay. Apologies for my feeble memory.
No problem. Yeah, it's just if you were...
I'm sure I engaged in that discussion. My concern is simply, certainly in the U.S. market, is having two different types of notes. Because all of our notes in the U.S. market are using the reference constructs.
I know.
It is what it is for the moment, I guess.
That's it. We went through the same, and ideally would have liked to align if we can, but this is a case where we really couldn't align.
Mm-hmm. And as you can see, we are not planning to discuss it today. We did not receive any feedback, specific feedback on it, apart from the discussion that we had on IPCG. So we didn't reopen that discussion again.
Okay. Just Lou, you were going to say something, or we're about halfway through this one, the statute. Did you have a comment, Lou? No, I guess you're going.
Okay.
Yeah, what Mike Willis said. Adding what Mike Willis said about education and learning, the XBRLUS Data Quality Committee created rules that we just released that are free of charge and open source, whereby for positive and negatives, we identified, many elements that can only be entered as a positive, and therefore if a company does enter them as a negative, it will pop up as an error if someone runs those rules. They are similar to the formula link-based rules for positive and negative, but I just want to let you know that it's just another way to try to make sure these filers don't put a positive, negative, and incorrectly. So just a comment, thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Where we can move to the next topic, I guess?
Yes, and that is on the proposals relating to the introduction of the duration element type. So currently in the IFRS taxonomy, we use the decimal element type for 7 elements that represent periods of time, which are shown on slide 19. And the issue with decimal element type as it relates to this particular element is that because it does not have a predetermined unit type in XBRL, allows preparers the flexibility to specify the unit. We've heard that there is diversity in practice in how the unit is specified, which makes it difficult for users to analyze and compare the data. As a result of that feedback, we proposed creating new line items for this element using the duration element type. So we received feedback from both GFRC and Tuffin Merrill, both of who agreed with using duration element type for all but one element, and that element is the actuarial assumption of retirement age. They thought that this element represents more of the point in time as opposed to a period of time information. However, GFRC said that they don't disagree with advancing with the proposal if it provides consistency in the reported unit, but Topol Mero said that using the decimal element would be more appropriate. So in response to that feedback, we kind of went back to what we mentioned in the PTU, which is that our research showed that there is diversity in the units that preparers use, and in addition, some of those units are not always sufficiently clear. We did additional research on the specific element in question, and we also found that to be the case in the sense that while half used age as the unit, others used a mix of different units, with a few actually not reporting the unit at all. So taking all of that into consideration, we recommend retaining the proposal to use the duration element type for all of the seven elements, just so we can get better consistency in how the units are reported. I'll pause there for any comments you have on the feedback and our response to that.
I believe the age as a decimal is more proper and appropriate than duration, and that was in the comment that was sent in. So I still lean that way. However, I'm glad you did the analysis to see what the different units were, and it's very interesting to see age and why, things like that. Mm-hmm. But I guess this one is, to me, there's no perfect answer, so I guess I'll stick with the original comment from Topan Merrill, but thanks for doing that analysis.
Any other comments? No, I think we can move along with it, unless there's anything else on that topic for you.
No, not from our end.
So, okay.
So the next topic is on the proposals relating to tagging useful lives and depreciation or amortization rates. So currently in the IFRS taxonomy, we use a text element type for elements that represent the disclosure of useful lives or of depreciation and amortization rates for about four different asset classes. We got feedback from this, and based on our observation, although useful lives and depreciation or amortization rates provide the same type of information to users, they cannot be compared directly. So in light of that, we propose creating new separate line items for useful lives and then for depreciation and amortization rates. In addition, for depreciation and amortization rates, we propose using the percentage line item to reflect that. And for useful lives, we propose creating three separate line items to represent the different ways in which useful lives can be reported. And this particular proposal is consistent with the interpretation of the requirements in IFRS standards. So we received feedback from GFRC, particularly as it relates to the proposal on the three different elements for useful lives. And they said they're not convinced that the proposals will be as helpful as we think it would be. They mentioned that from their experience, most entities use ranges to express the rates or the lives. And additionally, they said that the decimal element in particular is unlikely to be useful because they think it would require contextual information about what exactly the unit is. So as a result, they think the decimal element would either require another element to provide that additional detail or will result in entities deferring to the text element instead. In addition, they said that from their view, the variation in practice in terms of how this information is represented in the XBRR filing, they think is a consequence of the fact that IAS 19 is not specific enough in terms of how this information should be presented. So she recommended that our board thinks about being more specific about how the disclosure should be provided in the financial statements. So in response to that, we recommend retaining the proposal to create three line items for useful lives because, as I mentioned before, this approach is consistent with the current requirement in the IFRS standards. In light of the first point about entities using ranges to provide the information, we note that the IFRS taxonomy has a range axis, which can be used to tag values representing a range. And we also mentioned in the PTU, and I think I alluded to this earlier, that the decimal element type allows preparers to choose the most appropriate unit So the example that GFRC provided for an entity that is depreciating based on 8,000 flying hours, the decimal element will allow them to indicate that the unit type is in flying hours. So that addresses, we think that addresses the concern that they raised. In regards to the second point and the interrelation with the drafting of the IFR standards, we think it relates to the requirements in the standard and not of the PTU. And we note that it's outside of the scope of the IFR taxonomy to make amendments in the IFR standards. But we've forwarded on the comments to relevant parties within within the foundation for future purposes. So I'll pause there and see if you have any comments on the feedback and our response to that feedback.
I think there's none there.
Okay.
Any comments? No.
All right, so moving on to the last section within the data quality aspect of the PTU, and that is on tagging contingent consideration and indemnification assets and business combinations. So IFRS 3 requires entities to disclose the amount of contingent consideration arrangements and indemnification assets that's recognized as of the acquisition date that occurred during the period. And currently in the IFRS taxonomy, that disclosure requirement is reflected by a single line item that's shown on the second bullet point on slide 26. We noted that even though contingent consideration arrangements and indemnification assets relate to uncertain or contingent amounts to be paid or received, they represent different accounting concepts. So because of that, we propose splitting the existing line item into two line items, which you can see on slide 26 alongside the proposed documentation label. So we received feedback from Tupper Merrill, who they agreed with the suggestion to the proposal to split the existing line item into two. But they suggested that we amend the element label for the first line item to say contingent consideration in business combination. And this is because they think that the phrase recognized as of the acquisition date should only be used for those elements that represent the assets acquired and the liabilities assumed, and not those that are transferred as part of the business combination. So when performing our analysis, we considered the element label and the documentation label separately. As it relates to the element label, we propose retaining the proposal because using the phrase recognized as of the acquisition date reflects the wording in the disclosure requirement of IFRS 3. And additionally, we think going with a suggestion akin to what Tupper Merrill had could present a risk of a preparer inadvertently using this element to tag the total contingent consideration in the statement of financial position instead of that which was recognized as of the acquisition date that's required by the standard. However, as it relates to the proposed documentation label, we do think there is an opportunity to reflect the clarification that Merrill alluded to in the documentation label. And the second bullet point includes our recommendation for what that documentation label should say. So we're proposing some editorial corrections to the proposed documentation label. And this would align with the wording in the documentation label for the existing liabilities incurred element. So I'll pause there and see if you have any comments on the feedback and our recommendations, the two-part element label and the documentation label.
I like the change to the documentation label. Agree with that. And your first response point about that the wording reflects the wording of the disclosure requirement in the IFRS's makes sense to me.
Thank you.
Any other feedback? Comments? I think there's nothing for us.
So moving on then to the second segment in the PTU, which relates to the navigation proposals. So the first one was on a new presentation group for all accesses and members, and this specifically related to applied access, which are accesses that can be applicable outside of a defined IFRS taxonomy table. We noted that those accesses are only included in a relatively, in a few select presentation groups, depending on whether they were required by the standard. However, because they can be applicable to other disclosures, especially those that are voluntary provided by the preparers, we thought that because they're presented in various places of the IFRS taxonomy, might not always be easy to find, which presents a consequence of creating an extension access. So to address that problem, we propose creating a new presentation group that includes all of the available IFRS taxonomy accesses and their members, so it would be easier for preparers to find. The comment we received was from Topham Merrill, and they questioned the benefit, essentially being that they don't think it would be significant. However, they did note that they're not opposed to it, seeing as it's not inappropriate. And we just reiterate what we mentioned in the PT here, that we think that the cost consequences being that preparers can create an extension accesses, we think that that's enough for us to warrant retaining the proposal in order to avoid inconsistent tagging. The second part on navigation related to the proposal to remove entry points without documentation labels. A consequence of this proposal is also that because translated versions of the IFRS taxonomy are based on entry points without documentation labels, it would mean that the translated versions of the IFRS taxonomy will include the English documentation labels. So Topham Merrill disagreed with this proposal because in their view, it forces jurisdictions that don't want to use documentation labels to use them. And they suggested that we continue providing the two sets of entry points, but recommend that stakeholders use the entry points with documentation labels. In response to that, we recommend retaining the proposals for a number of reasons. The first being that regulators can customize the IFRS taxonomy for local use. So those jurisdictions that don't want to use the English documentation labels can have the option of either removing them or replacing them with alternatives translated versions of them. And secondly, we believe the IFRS Foundation should only promote good tagging practices, and we think the use of documentation labels alongside implementation notes are key to promoting such practices. So in light of those two, we recommend retaining the proposals. So I'll pause there and see if you have any comments on the feedback and our responses to the two navigation proposals.
On this, I feel an obligation to comment since I don't know where all made the comments, but really, you know, anyway, your responses are very clear and good, so I appreciate that. On the last comment, you know, regulators can't customize the taxonomy. Over time, we just have to keep in mind that the less customization, the better. So I think we all would agree if no regulator ever customized, that would be ideal, but knowing that they can and will, just keep in mind that the less customization, the better going forward.
Thank you, Lou.
Yeah. Good, thanks, Lou. That's a good point. Any other comments here before we move on? No, I think. Go ahead.
Sorry. When we say that regulators can customize, do we actually mean the IFRS taxonomy, or do we mean by creating a separate regulatory taxonomy that would be supplemental to the IFRS taxonomy?
Okay. Mike is Twitter here. I think when we use the word customization and extension, we use the wording as we have specified them in our regulator's guide. So typically we say an extension when a regulator adds additional elements to reflect particular local reporting practice or local regulations, like for instance for the SEC, this could be the SEC specific reporting requirements. We say customization when a regulator customizes a presentation link base or a reference link base or anything which has not to do with elements. And the reason why we use this different wording is because we're really saying, okay, you can customize because really the presentation and labels you use can depend very much on your jurisdiction. But you can only extend and never customize IFRS taxonomy elements, because once an element exists in the IFRS taxonomy, that is the element you should use and you can add to them, but you cannot as customize or replace. Whereas for these other link bases, you can more customize to reflect your local reporting practices.
Lego block. You can use the one you want, but you can't break them. You can't break your Lego block.
Absolutely.
Okay. I think we're okay to move along. Just trying to keep track of the time as well.
So very quickly, just to kind of touch on the other sets of feedback that we received that are not related to the proposals in the PTU. So GFRC suggested that we model depreciation methods and inventory measurement methods in a way that would allow preparers to select from a defined list of possible options. And they said that this would make the information more machine readable. We acknowledged the comment and we agreed that it would be useful to provide respective examples in a predefined format. And we note that XBR extensible enumerations can be used to achieve this. However, as they're currently not used in the IFRS taxonomy, we would need to separately consider whether and if so, how to use them in the future. And then on this slide, they kind of touch on suggestions which are similar to those raised in the IFRS 13 comment letter. So suggestions around providing more illustrative examples and reproducing relevant requirements in IFRS standards, but with we're considered in the IFRS 13 PTU, and the same applies here. And we'll consider how to address this two areas a bit more fulsome in our future proposed taxonomy updates. So that's all I had on general improvements. Are there any other comments that members would like to make on that? I'll hand it over to Eva to talk on IFRS 13.